Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond, and I want to thank you for joining us today for another episode. I'm really excited about this guest today. His name is Ashok Gupta. I ran into Ashok's work when I myself kind of hit a roadblock in my own healing, and it seemed to dead end at the nervous system. If you're not familiar with the ideas of neuroplasticity, Ashok's work has kind of tapped into, I guess, the neuroplasticity-ness that we have as humans to retrain the brain in a way to allow us to heal and move forward. Oftentimes when we get an illness, what happens is the nervous system can actually get stuck in some way. It's stuck in kind of a state of stress, and it doesn't really allow you to get the healing that you need and move forward on your journey. So sometimes we need to take a pause and actually retrain the brain how to interpret our environment, whether it's inside of our body or external, so that it feels safe and it can move forward. It's a very interesting topic, and I think in general, we're really just scraping the surface of how powerful this tool is, and I think we're gonna hear a lot of it, of different brain training tactics to move forward in the future of medicine, really. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Ashok's been kind enough to offer a discount to any of our listeners for any of the programs that they offer that you're interested in. So take a look at the show notes for that. I hope you enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Hello, and welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond, and I want to thank you all for tuning in and joining us for another episode. Today's guest is a health practitioner, a filmmaker, a public speaker, the founder of the Gupta Program, founder of the Meaning of Life Experiment, and more recently, the Coronavirus Challenge. His name is Ashok Gupta. Ashok, can you say hello to our audience for me?
Hi there, Les. Well, wonderful to be with you and your audience today.
I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today. I've actually stumbled across your work a while back when I was on my own healing journey, which seemed to hit a dead end at the nervous system. And I started to explore kind of how the nervous system is really paramount in, you know, becoming more part of our healing process. And at the Mindful Movement here, kind of facilitating or empowering self-healing is kind of a big part of our message. So I think your work is really critical for a lot of people, and I'm really happy to be a conduit for your information and help get it out there for you. Maybe we could start out, Ashok, telling us a little bit more about yourself and how you got to where you are right now.
Sure. Well, thank you for that introduction. So, yeah, myself, it's been a healing journey similar to yourself. So I had, I suffered from ME or chronic fatigue syndrome many, many years ago, 25 years ago, when I was at university. And I managed to heal myself 100% through my research. So I did a lot of medical research, especially into the brain neurology of emotion, the brain neurology of illness. I got myself fully well and then set up a clinic to support others through chronic illness. And when I say chronic illness, I mean those illnesses that the doctor simply says, there's nothing more we can do. Take these pills and leave my surgery because there's not much we can do for you. And it's those illnesses, those chronic illnesses, that are the majority of illnesses that doctors are actually treating. So that might be pain syndromes, fibromyalgia, upper respiratory conditions that they can't really do much about, fatigue, a very common symptom that presents itself, and anxiety. All of these are what I call software problems rather than hardware problems. So as part of my research and as part of the Gupta program, we take this idea that the medical profession is very good at treating hardware problems. So they treat the body like a car. You've got something wrong with the engine, we'll go and fix that. You've got something wrong with the windows, we'll fix that. And that model, that purely kind of reductionist scientific model, has been transferred to the human body. And what we say, actually, the majority of illnesses that people face are software issues, where the brain and the body have reacted to something and they keep reacting in the similar way. Yeah, so the analogy being it's like a post-traumatic response. So many chronic illnesses are when the body's been through an intense experience and then keeps reacting as if that intense experience is continuing.
It's like stuck in a cycle. So what are some of the things that would, be at the source of that process that winds up kind of taking over that cycle that people get stuck in?
You know, I always ask the biggest question of all, you know, why are we here? So we ask that question from a philosophical perspective, but we can also ask it from a scientific perspective. And if we take the scientific perspective, we're here because over millions of years, our nervous system has evolved to protect us. Yep. So we are survival machines. Yep. Our genes want to pass on from generation to generation. So that is the priority of our nervous system. When we have let's say a weakened system, so a weakened immune system or a weakened nervous system, primarily from stress, you know, chronic or acute stress. When an illness comes along, and that could be, let's say someone has an accident, a road accident, or they contract a virus, obviously big in the news right now, or they perhaps are exposed to a chemical or an inoculation. If the system is weak, what will happen is it will see that particular stressor as far worse than it actually is. It will overdefend the system. And as a result of that overdefense, once that trigger has gone, so once the flu is gone or the pain is gone, the body and the brain and the nervous system are still responding as if it's still here, creating this chronic loop. Okay, so this is these illnesses are illnesses of over defense or over survival strategies by the body, because the body doesn't care whether you feel good or not. The body prioritizes survival. Survival is its number one priority. And because we live in a society, what I call an inflammatory society, both emotionally and physically, we live in a society where our nervous systems are constantly stimulated. Our immune systems are constantly stimulated by the stresses we experience. Our nervous system and immune system are primed to over-respond, over-defend, and get stuck in protective responses. And that's why we see so many of these chronic illnesses in modern life.
So basically, you're saying the chronic illnesses, the collection of symptoms that people are most likely to experience are really from like an immunological dysfunction. So where the immune system, when you say the reaction, you're really talking about an inflammatory reaction, the immune system's response to whatever the insult is, the environmental stressor or biological stressor, whatever, or like the physical trauma. It's the immune system's essentially stuck in reaction mode. and needs to be somehow reset somehow?
That's exactly right, yes. So we call all of these suite of conditions, and there's many of them, including POTS and many other conditions related to ME and chronic fatigue syndrome. We call these conditions neuroimmune conditioned syndromes. So neuro, because they involve the nervous system, immune, because obviously there's conditioning in the immune system as well. Conditioned essentially means learnt, a learnt response, and syndrome, because there's a collection of symptoms which are unique to each person according to their genetic or bodily vulnerabilities. So neuroimmune condition syndromes. And once the brain has got trained to over-respond as a result of that intense experience, the body and the brain will keep triggering, yes, there is an inflammatory response, but there's also a neurological response. There are endocrine responses. There are mitochondria that aren't functioning correctly. All of the systems are now in a state of hypervigilance and sympathetic mode. So constant overstimulation of the immune system and nervous system is at the root source of many different illnesses.
So why is that? Why doesn't the immune system understand when maybe the threat has dissipated? Why doesn't it know, just like it knows to respond when it needs to, why doesn't it know how to chill out when the immediate stress is gone?
It's a very good question, and I like to give a Game of Thrones analogy, given there's so many fans of Game of Thrones.
I'm one of them. Bring it on.
Oh, you're one of them. Brilliant. Oh, yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So this is something that people can really relate to. So imagine you are the king or the queen of the castle. I'm assuming you're the king of the castle, and your body is the castle itself. Yeah. And the army is your nervous system, and the navy is your immune system. Okay. Now that castle is surviving. Everything's going well. Yeah. Everyone's well fed. Everything's good. Winter hasn't come yet. And then suddenly there's a famine, let's say, or there's a drought. So suddenly the people, the army, the navy, the people living in the castle, they're all weakened. Yeah, they're weakened physically. Yeah, they can't do as much. They're under stress. And that could be the physical stress of the drought, or it can be emotional stress. Let's say for whatever reason, there's some level of emotional stress amongst the people. Then an army comes invading over the hill. The immune system and the nervous system, so your navy and your army, are primed and ready to defend, but they're weak. So they defend against that army, and they manage to fight off that invading army, and they think, oh, phew, thank God for that. You know, we managed to do it. But then another army comes over another hill, and they fight it off, and they think, phew, we managed to do that, even though we're so weak. Now, that army and navy, because they're so weak, are they going to switch off in the good times and just drink and be merry? No, they are going to be constantly using up the castle's resources to replenish themselves, to have all the sentries guarding the castle, making sure that another army coming over the hill, they'll be able to defend. And now what happens if there's just, I don't know, a little girl walking over the hill or someone on a horse walking over the hill? They are so traumatized and ready to fight that they will send out battalions of the army and the navy to go and figure out if this is a threat, okay? Because they've become so traumatized by the experiences that it doesn't matter how logical we are to say, hey, look, come on, guys, chill out, there's nothing wrong. They must ensure survival of the castle. And an analogy similar to this is that of people who go into war zones. Yeah. So they've experienced intense trauma on the battlefield. And even when those veterans then come back to civilian life, if they hear a balloon popping or a car backfiring or, someone threatening them, the nervous system response that they get is pure panic. And that is the body's defensive strategy saying, you were in danger before and you nearly lost your life. Now I will over defend and over protect you through these responses. And the key answer to your question is, because we live in a more threatening environment than we did a few hundred years ago, in terms of emotional stress, physical stress, mental stress, spiritual stress, then it means that even once we've recovered from the condition, these systems don't want to switch off. They still feel threatened. So now emotional stress, and many people who have these conditions report this, even emotional stress can trigger off one of these responses.
Yeah, I could speak to that, definitely. I've experienced that. And I've definitely experienced where, like, I could relate to what you talk about, how everything's kind of on guard, where when you're not doing well, and I guess your system is suppressed, that the little things will kind of trigger you that really shouldn't. Like, I remember when I was in the worst of it for me, like something like maybe dropping a plate or something, where you should have, you know, a half a second of, I don't know, oh shit, I dropped it, you know, that, you know, you're pissed off for like a moment. But it would be there'd be like this big physiological response that seemed really out of proportion, where like I would feel adrenaline dump into my gut. It would, like, there would be this strong physiological response that was not ideal. It was clearly not normal over small things. And it was like the threshold had really been compromised. So what's the process? Like, how does, you have a program that is an online program that I've heard many good things about. I mean, what's the process or the science behind how to reset that system? Like, how do we interact with kind of the subconscious mind's perception of these potential stressors?
Yes. So I want to just start off with a bit of brain neurology to answer that question. So we have two main brain structures that we believe are involved in these types of conditions. One being the amygdala, and we have two of them kind of sitting behind the eyes in the brain. And another brain structure called the insula, which kind of sits between the limbic system and the cortex. And in animal studies, both of those systems have been involved in conditioning responses in the nervous system and the immune system. So I believe that those two brain structures are at the core of the issue, although the entire brain is involved. Now, I believe that the learning, as I said, is in those two brain structures. And each time you have a stimulus, whether it be an audio stimulus, a physical stimulus, or a infection, or whatever it may be, or a pain stimulus from the body, those brain structures cannot control the bodily response anymore. So normally the insula takes all this information from the body, processes it, and then creates a response. But we know in these conditions, especially fibromyalgia, that the insula is actually shrunk, and it can no longer process the pain signals from the body. So it is just constantly just sending panic systems across the entire physiology. These structures can be controlled by our more conscious, rational brain. And I don't mean mind here. So these conditions are definitely not in the mind, but they are in the brain. And that's a big difference there. So in neurological research, what they found is there are projections that go from our prefrontal cortex, potentially also from our hippocampus, that project to the amygdala and these other brain structures to calm them down. Okay, so it's almost as if this brain structure says, panic, panic, we're in danger. This prefrontal cortex says, either, oh my gosh, you're right, we're in danger, and sends a confirmation response back to the subconscious brain, or it can send a different response down to the subconscious brain. Now, that's fine when we're doing something around emotional reactions. So if someone calls you an idiot, right, your amygdala will fire off, going danger, fight or flight, but you can consciously say, oh, just let it go. So what? He called me an idiot. You know, let me just let that go. But when it comes to the immune system and nervous system, those signals are far more subtle and profound. So what we do in our program is train people to become aware of the physiological signals, the cognitive signals that and emotional signals that indicate that a danger response is being put into play. And then there's a specific 7-step process that trains the brain, the prefrontal cortex, not to respond to those signals. And in fact, send messages back to the subconscious brain, the amygdala and the insula, that we aren't in danger during this period of time. So you're switching off immune and neurological responses through these brain retraining systems. And I wouldn't, it's very different to cognitive behavioral therapy or any kind of talking therapy. It is training the nervous system. And an analogy of this would be, let's say we learn to drive, right? We can't sit there on the first lesson when we learn to drive and say, right, if I'm really positive and if I imagine moving the steering wheel and the gear shift and the accelerator, I somehow will be able to drive. No, we need, you know, 5 lessons, 10 lessons, 15 lessons, sometimes 50 lessons to train our nervous system to drive that car automatically, until eventually we could be eating a sandwich or talking on the phone whilst we're driving. Those processes have become automatic. And in the same way, at the moment, in a lot of these illnesses, our brain processes have become automatic to over defend and over respond. They need to come to conscious rational awareness, be retrained, and then the system goes back to a different homeostasis, a different state of reactivity.
Okay. And so for the user that's experiencing this process, I mean, what does that look like? Like logistically, is this like an hour a day where you're following a video that's kind of coaching you along, you know, this process is for a few weeks, months, or what does that generally look like?
So the online program is a series of 15 interactive video sessions and lots of audio exercises. Okay, so it's all online, and you also get a manual in the post as well. And within that program, you watch the videos, and as you go along with the videos, you practice the techniques and tools. But the key thing is, it's not about the theory. And we have many, especially intellectuals, who come and say, oh yes, I understand all of this, and they think that that's going to retrain their brain. But it's the practical day-to-day brain retraining that makes the difference. So there are some meditation processes in there, but they are supportive processes. The main processes are ones where every morning you do 5 rounds or 10 rounds of this brain retraining technique, where you have a physical floor chart and you step through certain processes. Yeah. So you step here, right now do this, take a step here, now I do this, take a step here, now I do this. Simply because these defense responses are primeval evolutionary responses. You can't just tell your brain, hey, my friend, just switch that off. It's not going to listen because it's doing what it thinks is best. So it's a very visceral bodily involvement in switching off danger responses. So there's some self-coaching, there's visualization, there's breathing. It's a whole structured process of sending those messages back to the unconscious, supported by meditation as well, and a holistic perspective. So there are some brain retraining programs that just focus on brain retraining, but ultimately we are a holistic being, and I'm sure you obviously concur with that. So the diet, the activity, the pacing, the sleep, the medications, all of that are also looked at within the program as well to make it a holistic program of recovery.
So let's say somebody shows up to the program, they've had, you know, 10, 20 years where they haven't felt great. The doctors they've seen kind of hit dead ends where they've kind of run out of their tools and their toolkit, and then they start this program. Like, what's a realistic expectation to get progress? You know, how long does it take for somebody to notice a benefit from these practices? Like, what's a realistic expectation for it to really get the most out of the program?
We call it a 6-month program, but we call it a minimum 6 months. So for some people, they notice benefits literally within hours and days. Others, it takes weeks. Others, it takes months. But we would say that it's a program of recovery which you stick to for a year, a minimum of 6 months, but up to a year. And during that year, we hope to get somebody, probably within 6 months, up to about an 80% recovery, a 70 to 80% recovery. Because that final 20% is then reintegrating yourself back into normal activity. And that can take a little longer. So that's not necessarily brain retraining, actually, it kind of is. You are still doing some level of brain retraining, but you're pacing and training your body to get back to used to doing normal activity. Yeah. So that would be a good outcome, would be to get to, you know, 70 to 90% of your original abilities within 6 to 12 months. That would be our kind of program. And we're realistic about that, because some people say, oh, but you can do it in, you know, one weekend, or you can do it in a week. The challenge with that is you may have that intensity of experience of brain retraining, but unless it is continued for a consolidated period of time, you're likely to get a dip, and you're likely to kind of have symptoms come back, because the retraining hasn't been deep and consolidated when you're going through your challenging times.
Yeah, I think that's really important for people to recognize that, you know, if you haven't been feeling good for a long time, to set a realistic expectation where, like, it's not, there's no magic pill. There's no thing that, and you'll see stuff advertised as if it's a magic pill, even if it's not a pill per se, but that, you know, you could fix some 30-year issue in like a weekend or something. And I remember listening to a microbiome talk by a functional medicine doc, and something stuck out to me because I had recently finished like a 3-week course of antibiotics for Lyme disease. And she said something like, you know, for every week of like broad spectrum antibiotic you're on, figure 1 to 2 years to build yourself back. And I just finished 3 weeks, and I was like, shit, I got a road ahead of me. But it, like, and sure enough, it turned out to be pretty spot on with that timing. And in that process, and listening to other people's healing stories, the successful stories kind of put it in perspective that, you know, if you've been, you know, figure at least a month for every year you haven't been feeling well. So, you know, if you've been through 20 doctors or something, you probably haven't been feeling well for a long time, and you still have a road ahead of you. And it's good to set that expectation going into it, so you're not frustrated where you started something and a week later you're not all better. Like, you have an understanding that you're in a journey of some sort, and that's okay. Now, you know, it's not going to go away overnight, but as long as your steps are mostly forward steps, you know, keep practicing.
Yes, and we also share with people, please don't compare yourself to others. Yeah, you're on your own healing journey. Everyone's at different starting points. Everyone's got a unique brain. Or how long it takes to retrain your brain is a very unique thing. And, you know, we have people, as I said, who have fibromyalgia. Within weeks, their pain levels have halved. And in fact, a study that we've just done in Spain, which will be published soon, and so we're very excited about that, was a controlled study with 42 patients. And the control was relaxation, with a similar amount of relaxation, and then our program. And it found that within 8 weeks, on people on our program, their fibromyalgia scores reduced by 40%, as well as many other pain scores, whereas the relaxation group had no change. Yeah, so this is a really groundbreaking study that will be published soon, and should obviously then generate a lot more interest, for larger scale studies in what we're doing. But it's just really exciting to know that there are now solutions and ways forward for patients that don't involve medicines, that don't involve something that can be even more impactful on the body. Yeah. But actually, we can heal the root cause, which is our own body stuck in a position which it thinks is right for it, but isn't right for it. Okay. If you see what I mean. Yeah.
So you did a study where the control group spends like what, the same amount of time as it takes to run the program, just relaxing without the tasks of the program?
Exactly. That's exactly.
Yeah, I guess some things are kind of hard to put together good research on. And so that's interesting. Like, I noticed that, like, with meditation, you know, you can't really have like a placebo controlled group. You can't tell people to like pretend they're meditating. Or so there's always these, there's some things, there's obstacles when you're composing a study. So that's cool that you are able to have a control group where they're still doing something that would be considered nourishing, so you can get really kind of compare apples to apples there. So yeah. Let's, so you mentioned you created the meaning of life experiment. Can you touch on what that is a little bit?
Yes, of course. So in my life, I always do things which I think inspire me to want to share something. You know, it comes from a deeper place. And the Gupta program for me was just, I've got myself better. I want to help as many people with these conditions. And that's where that sprouted from. And then once I'd created that, another real kind of ambition of mine was to create the Meaning of Life experiment, which is essentially an app. And on that app, it's a 30-day program of videos and meditations to discover more happiness, meaning, and purpose. So in these 30 days, you get, let's say, a 20-minute video every day, and then a 10 or 20-minute meditation. And we start off looking at quantum physics, the nature of reality, the nature of consciousness, as well as looking at meditation. Then we go through a hypothesis, and this is, I guess, based on Eastern philosophies, a hypothesis of how this universe actually works and our position, our place in this universe, how the mind works, how the intellect works. And it's a whole journey of understanding all of these processes and systems, but done in a very, almost like a BBC documentary style. So it's for people who perhaps have had a lot of skepticism about, let's say, anything that's vaguely spiritual or perhaps, seems a bit out there. And actually say there's a lot of logical principles which are supported by quantum physics that you can look at and put together a hypothesis of why we're here, what this universe is about, and how it all works. And, we've had people who are religious, people who are Jews or Muslims or Christians or Hindus, and we've had people who are atheists or agnostics who've been able to go through this program and discover what we all share as human beings, those core values, and say, even though this stretches me, I can understand this and I can believe it.
So you said that's an app and you just follow along, and it's kind of a tutorial and a practice along the way.
Yes, it's a whole program of a journey of self-discovery. So you get the videos and meditations, and then you also have some questions for self-reflection. And then there's a community where you can go online, share your reflections, and help others and support others through their reflections as well. And the ultimate purpose of it is to open our minds up to new possibilities. And I'm sure this is something that you've looked into as well, which is that our day-to-day life, what we perceive around us, is a very small percentage of the existence, of the totality. And when we investigate further by going inwards, there's a wealth of experiences and a wealth of understandings that can spring forth that make perfectly logical sense. There's no difference between science and spirituality. There's just a different starting point. But ultimately, if there is a constructive way that they can work together and live together and understand each other, which is obviously this hypothesis that we go through.
Yeah, for some folks, it's hard to think about or believe in something that you can't see. But to think that the only things that are like real or true or the things we could see would be, I guess, it's kind of naive in some way. There's a lot that's not seen and a lot that's still not understood.
Absolutely. So we look around us and think, right, there's nothing around us. In fact, there are subatomic particles bombarding all of us, billions of them every second of every day. There are radio waves all around us that we can't see. So this, and in terms of the spectrum of visible light that we can see, that represents a very small spectrum of the frequencies of our existence.
A little slice.
So we are seeing a microcosm, a very small percentage of what's out there. And even if you look at dark energy, dark matter, that makes up 96% of the universe, and yet scientists don't know what it's made of. They can't detect it. They just know it's there. Yeah. Right, so we are only seeing a small percentage of 4% of the universe. And just like if you have a radio, if you tune it correctly, you tune into a frequency and can detect that frequency. Now imagine if we are the radio and our consciousness is the radio, and we can only pick up the signals of that whatever, 96% of the universe, or whatever, however you want to look at it. And we as human beings are the only people that can tune into that. And meditation, going deep into meditation, is one way that we can tune deep into that. Then it starts making sense. Right. And we start discovering we're much more than this mind, body, intellect that we perceive ourselves as. Yeah. Something deeper.
Yeah, well said. So you've recently put together something called the Coronavirus Challenge. Not sure exactly what that is. Interested in to find out. If you're listening to this, you've probably heard the word coronavirus recently. There's been something in the news.
Just maybe slightly, yes.
A little bit. Tell us about this challenge, Ashok, and what are you offering here?
So the reason we set up the Coronavirus Challenge was because the mainstream media and the medical profession were focusing on avoidance of the virus. And that's absolutely correct and right to avoid the virus. But at the same time, as we open up society now, as we come out of lockdown, it's inevitable that there is a chance that we will get this virus. So boosting our immune system is the most important thing to do. And yet, as a society, we're not trained in that idea of preventative healthcare. It's all about, you know, how do we stop ourselves from getting the virus? Well, then by then it's too late. If we have a strong immune system, there's actually plenty of evidence now that that will protect us against COVID-19. So they've already got some research on meditation. They've already got some research on physical activity, as an example. So the coronavirus challenge,
COVID in particular, they already have research out on that, or?
Yeah, they do, and I can send you some of that, which is really fascinating research. They found that people who were regularly exercising had far lower chance of being hospitalized, right? They found people who regularly engaged in relaxation techniques and meditation were less likely to get the inflammatory response, which would then cause them to be hospitalized again. Then some of the other research, sleep, we know there's a connection with sleep as well. But all of this was very well established when it came to flus and colds. We already knew this. And this virus is very similar to those infections in terms of, you know, if you've got a strong immune system, you're less likely to get this virus. So it's a 10-day program of looking at preventative healthcare in terms of my MEND protocol. So MEND stands for mind, exercise, nighttime routine, and diet. And these four pillars are the main pillars of our overall health, not only with infections, but even when it comes to cancer or heart disease or any kind of illness. So the mind aspect in the program focuses on how do we relax our minds in terms of meditation. So lots of free meditations on there, but also how do we reduce our anxiety about the pandemic? How do we reduce our anxiety about our financial situation? So it's very targeted to the people, the experiences people are going through right now. Okay. Then E is for exercise. What does the research say? I mean, we spent a long time, the last 20 years, researching the immune system. And so each of the recommendations that we make in this program has been backed up by research, and we provide the actual research study so people can go away and look at the evidence themselves. So exercise, you know, the certain amount of exercise you can do halves the chances of you getting an infection. Yeah. Sometimes it can reduce your chances of infection by 80%.
You mean it reduces your chance of acquiring it, or it reduces your probability of getting like sick from it? I know there's a lot of people that could contract it and they don't really even know.
Yes.
Because I guess their immune system's just doing its job. So mm-hmm. can you interact with, other than like avoiding people, can you interact with your ability to just contract it, or can you only interact with how well you're going to respond once you get it?
It's the latter. It's how well you will respond once you get it. And there's several layers. So what happens is we are constantly exposed to flus and colds and infections and viruses, and they live in our bodies. They can be opportunistic infections. And I'm sure at some point we can talk about Lyme disease, because we treat that as well. And we treat that as an opportunistic infection. So we're constantly bombarded by these things, but it's a question of whether our immune system fights them off straight away so that they don't turn into an infection, meaning that it's multiplied enough that it's causing symptoms in the body. Okay. And so these interventions don't stop you necessarily from getting it, but they stop it from turning into a symptomatic illness. So the first layer of our defense is the epithelial cells in the nose and the back of the throat. When the virus comes, it then enters those particular cells. If our immune system is strong, it should be able to fight it off at that point. If it's not, then the virus starts coming down the throat into the lungs. The second layer of the immune system is there to fight it off. If it can't, then it starts infecting the lungs, and then we get severe problems. So boosting our immune system works at several layers. So you were going to ask, Les.
So this is nice to hear. It seems like, I try to stay off the news, but when the TV's on, it seems like the narrative that's coming through isn't really focused on what we can do to improve our chances. And it's very clear that, I don't know what's true, but I know that a lot of the narratives coming through are not 100% true. I don't know if anybody knows what's absolutely true in regards to this, but one thing that seems clear is that the virus will pick on you if you're not as healthy. And to me,
yes,
that's very important, because what that message is the framework we should be approaching this is, how do we optimize our health so that, you know, we are more likely to be the type of person where when it comes in, we don't even notice. We have a lot of control over that based on really, I guess, lifestyle choices.
I absolutely agree. We're not being told this message because it's not the way the medical profession works. It's not the way our modern systems work. So we're trying to get that message out that let's use this pandemic as an opportunity to get healthy. We're all at home. We've all got time. We can't make that excuse anymore. And we've all got the ability, because there's so many meditation programs online now. There's so many apps you can download to get yourself physically healthy. Let's do that, because not only will that help us with this virus, but it will also help us with our health in general. And that's the message we want to empower people with. Right. That if you meditate, we know that you halve the chances of getting an infection from another coronavirus or a flu. If you exercise, you can reduce it by up to 50 to 80% in terms of contracting an infection. If you get the right amount of sleep and high quality sleep, you can reduce your chances of getting infection by between a factor of 3 to 6. Yeah, I mean, sleep is absolutely one of the most powerful influences of our immune system. And finally, diet. Diet's the more obvious one. There are plenty of things we can do in our diet to reduce our chances of getting it or getting it in a severe way. And connected to diet, we do know that obesity, being severely overweight, is a big risk factor for these conditions, for COVID. Also diabetes a precondition. So these are all things that directly impact on our immune system. So if we are obese or overweight, if we have diabetes, if we have some other kind of respiratory illness, our system is already weakened. But if we follow the MEND protocol, there's no reason why we couldn't also potentially get closer to our ideal weight. There's no reason that it wouldn't help you with diabetes and things, because these interventions are what I call getting us to our optimal level of being. Yes, yeah, incorporating, whether it's Ayurvedic principles or nutrition principles, it's looking at all the research, putting it together and saying, this is the best way to live. And it also happens to reduce our chances of infection.
So what are the things you do? I'm a big fan of daily practices, and I think they really add mm-hmm. up, and you know, we become the sum of our practices. What are the things that you do personally when you're kind of composing the minutes of your day to give you the best chance to be your optimal self?
So absolutely love to share that. So I start off with my cardio. So when I wake up in the morning, big glass of water, can be alkalized with some lemons or cucumbers. So waking up in the morning, flushing out all those toxins from the system with a big glass of water, then physical activity. So the main thing is really exposing yourself to daylight straight away. So I will do 20 to 30 minute cardio. Then I will come back, shower. And then what's absolutely core for me is breathing and meditation. So a few moments of breathing, followed by, you know, between 20 to 40 minutes of meditation in the morning, and then 20 minutes to 30 minutes in the evening as well before dinner. Yeah. And then during the day, really making sure I'm hydrated, making sure I'm eating lots of fresh, vibrant foods. So lots of fruit, lots of vegetables, lots of lentils, kind of covered in the program, all those things that boost your immune system. Yeah, so I would say that those would be things that you know, are absolutely core to my day. And obviously, there's plenty of other things that I do as well. But one thing I'd love for people to do is take your phone calls whilst walking in nature. So as part of our jobs, we all often have to take phone calls in some capacity. So as soon as you get a phone call that you know you're going to be on, what I do is just go and walk in the local park. So it means that you're getting fresh air, you're walking, and you're also working. At the same time. And these days, even on our phones, if we need to check a document or we need to check an email, we can still do that whilst we're walking, right? So that's, once again, it's how you incorporate these lifestyle aspects into your day-to-day work, into your day-to-day way of being, that just then keep your body in tip-top condition.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I do believe that most people don't get enough sun, and to be able to look for opportunities where, you know, you're like that phone call idea, that's brilliant. What an opportunity to kind of kill two birds with one stone. You could sit in artificial light in a controlled environment, or go out and let that nature connection just happen around you. And not
sometimes I'll check my steps and I've done 15,000 steps because I've been on the phone for 3 hours. Right? And I'm like, brilliant. You know, I've had 3 hours of exercise, sure, 3 hours of walking, but it just feels good. And when you're on the call, you know, many of us are on calls all day, you're also more energized and feeling more optimistic and uplifted, and uplifting other people, because you're walking rather than just sitting and having a meeting. So that's, these simple things can make a huge difference to our physiology.
Yeah, especially over time. You know, a little thing, like you don't think much of it, but if it's just one, you know, an extra 5-10 minutes a day of walking, what does that look like after 3 years, 5 years? You know, it adds up.
Yeah.
That's great. So if people are interested in this coronavirus challenge, how do they get in touch with it?
Okay, so it's a free not-for-profit program, and we're offering it to companies, individuals, organizations, whoever wants to take this and just make a difference. So the website is thecoronaviruschallenge.com, and you go on there, you just simply sign up, and then you have access to the online system with all the videos, the meditations, and all the knowledge to kind of boost your immune system. So it's very, very simple. And yeah, we'd love for more people to use it, to try it, and realize that there's nothing more important than doing this right now. Okay, we are in a situation where this COVID, and you know, people say different things, it is actually not just about the death rate that we're seeing, but it's also the long-term scars. So we know from some latest research in China that if you contract the virus and it affects you in some way, there can be some physical scarring in the lungs, so it can affect you long-term in the lungs, but also there are many people seeming to contract chronic fatigue syndrome, ME, as a result of it as well, because it is quite a severe infection if it takes hold. So right now, boosting our immune system, making sure it doesn't turn into an infection, there can be nothing more important, because as we come out of lockdown, the chances actually increase that we will be exposed to it once more. There will be outbreaks. There's no question of it. Until there is a universal vaccine, which could be, you know, 2 years away, realistically, at least. Therefore, let's focus on our health. Let's empower ourselves to do that. And why is it we don't? Because we've been taught as children, as adults, that you get sick and then you go to the doctor. We need to shift that way of thinking and that model to say we take charge of our own health, and we can actually make a difference. And something I'd love to share with you, I don't know if you've seen this research, it'll be very powerful for other people you speak to. In Harvard did a study on meditation and relaxation techniques. This was in 2015, where they followed 5,000 people for a year in terms of how much they visited a doctor or a hospital. And then they taught them to meditate for 20 minutes a day to go and go into a deep relaxation state. And then they followed them for a year afterwards. And believe it or not, they found a 42% drop in the usage of medical facilities.
That's substantial.
42%, nearly halving. Now, if a drug company came up with a drug that halved the amount of usage of medical facilities, it would be the miracle drug of the 21st century. I mean, literally, we'd be talking about it everywhere. And yet, because it involves something that the drug companies can't benefit from and involves some time and effort to learn it and do it each day, but it doesn't, as we know, it doesn't become an effort after a while, you know, it wasn't even front page headlines. And yet it should be. As a civilization, we have the tools and know-how to take care of ourselves, and yet it isn't being promoted.
Yeah, they don't have the incentive. I mean, it's hard for the, Western model to make money telling people to go meditate, that's for sure. But yeah, we do have a lot more control than most people give ourselves credit for in our well-being. And part of it is personal responsibility. Like, it's easy to take a pill, and dedicating 20 minutes a day for some people at first, like, that's really overwhelming. Like, especially if you have a truly busy schedule, there's always enough time for what's important if it's important to you, but it doesn't make it easy. It's simple. Like, in theory, it's simple to take 20 minutes and sit on a cushion and watch your breath and see what happens and allow meditation to take place. But, if you're not used to that, that could be a really big hump for people to get over, or exercise, going to the gym. Like, I work at a gym, and I've always said, like, the hardest part is pulling into the parking lot. Just, it's showing up. And once you build that habit, then it's, becomes who you are. And, when you away from it, you don't feel yourself, and, it becomes part of you.
It does. And I say it's like learning to brush your teeth or have a shower each day. It becomes a point at which you don't question it anymore because you know it's good for you and you feel better. And in the same way, if people take the meaning of life experiment, most people find that starting off with short meditations, starting off 5-10 minute meditations gets them kind of into it. Then they kind of go for 15 to 20 minutes. Because there are guided meditations there, it just becomes easier to get into. And there's a community of people doing it as well. So just like yourselves, like, you have a community of people kind of working on mindfulness and meditation. In the same way, if you do it with a friend, you do it in a group, it can then just feel a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said exercise is a component of that program?
Exercise is a component of the coronavirus challenge. Okay.
So there are specific exercises, or is it just go exercise? I mean, are they guiding you through a particular exercise, or?
It gives you the time, how much time you should invest in physical exercise. And then we also give people resources. So apps you can download that will gradually pace you back to getting a good cardiovascular fitness.
Gotcha. Oh, that sounds like a great tool. And for those listeners, we'll be linking to all these ways to connect to these ideas and these programs in the show notes. So keep an eye out for that. Ashok, is there anything else you'd like to touch on or share with the audience?
Yes, absolutely. Something that we're launching, as if we didn't have enough on our plate at the clinic, but something else we're launching very soon. I'd love for your listeners to have a look at this. It's something called Humanity's Wake Up Call, which is essentially saying that so many of us feel that something has to change and shift now. We can't go back to the way that we were living before this pandemic. Politically, economically, socially, education-wise, environment. We all have that feeling that, look, this is an opportunity for the world to come together. We've never had this opportunity before. to say, let's start a movement of people that want to see change, the way that society is structured at a fundamental level. So we have this online summit where we have lots of top speakers. We have Naomi Harris, the Oscar nominee. We have Connie Huck as a BBC TV presenter. And we have many other people who'll be talking on societal and planetary change to say, let's come together, let's build a movement. So we'll be discussing our political system, and racism. We'll be discussing how our education system needs to transform into a human values education system, about how healthcare needs to transform. Instead of taking up 20 to 25% of the economy, we now need to focus on preventative healthcare and roll it out to the masses. Environment, we've got to stop talking about this now. And if we took the same action as we are on the pandemic for the environment and all of these issues, we can make a difference. There just hasn't been the political will before. But if we have enough people coming together and saying, let's make a change, let's join this movement, then we can actually bring these things to fruition and change policy around the world. So that's the inspiration that we want to give to people. So we'll be having this summit, and there'll be an opportunity online for people to connect with organizations and individuals. There'll be a kind of virtual Facebook kind of system on there, but we won't be using Facebook. So we want to get people to network and get on board with this.
Okay, great. Well, I will keep a lookout for that, and we will post again all that stuff in the show notes. Ashok, I want to thank you for taking the time today. This has been really cool. It's great to finally meet you. I've heard about you for a while now, and it's great to hear your story. And it seems like you have a ton to offer. So I do encourage our listeners to go check out your resources at guptaprogram.com. And you said the website for the coronavirus was the coronaviruschallenge.com?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
So again, I want to thank you, and I want to thank
the meaning of life. For the meaning of life, if people want to download the app, it's themeaningoflife.tv.
Okay, themeaningoflife.tv. Okay, great. Thank you. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. I hope you got some value out of this conversation. And if you have any comments, please reach out to us. And Ashok, I hope that we could speak again sometime in the future. And maybe one day when things settle down, we'll meet in person. I look forward to it.
And that would be lovely. Yes.
And again, thanks everybody for your listening. I hope everybody has a terrific day.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. It was great to finally talk to Ashok after checking out his work quite a bit over the years. If you find yourself like you are stuck in some healing journey where you may be at some kind of dead end, a roadblock, like you just can't break through a plateau of something, it might be worth checking out. There's a good chance that there's something involved where if you get your nervous system working for you, that maybe you can make some progress. So check out the show notes for more information on that. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions or comments about this topic, I'd love to hear from you. And I want to thank you again for listening. And if you are enjoying these episodes, if you haven't yet, please go to your podcast player and offer a review. I would greatly appreciate it. Hope you enjoy your day and stay tuned for more episodes.